This morning, I know that I need to go over the list of topics that are going to be on the upcoming exam, but there are a couple of really simple acid-based problems, very related type of problems, that I wanted to present to you because a question came up in office hours related to them. And it's actually not the question that came up in office hours that I'm curious about. It's how would you approach the problem? So here is one problem. What is the pH of 0.150 molar potassium cyanide? And no, the exam is not this weekend. I wouldn't do that. It's on Monday. How would you approach this problem? Because there are four types of problems that we had worked in class. Ooh, silence. So if this had been a real exam question... Well, remember that I had said that the real difficulty in these types of problems is figuring out what is the word problem. In other words, what are you really solving for? So you're solving for pH, but what is KCN? Yes, the KCN interacts with water. That's the point. The potassium doesn't do anything itself. Potassium is a spectator. How do you know that? All of the group 1 ions are spectators in general. They don't tend to react in these types of reactions. Think of it this way. If you can remember your solubility rules, anything where the... cation is sodium, lithium, potassium, anything that's a group 1 ion, they're automatically soluble. And that's not the reason why they end up unreactive, but I'm just pointing out that those are unreactive. Now, that's actually a bad thing maybe to say because ammonium is another one of those things that makes ions always soluble, but of course ammonium is acidic. And that's the point I'm getting to. You have to recognize, and you might say, well, how am I expected to know this? Exactly this kind of problem. You have to recognize that CN minus is the conjugate of a weak acid. And it turns out that CN minus is itself a weak base, therefore. You might say, well, how can you have a weak acid that makes a weak base? Because I thought that the conjugates were... Yeah, I'll get to that in just a second. But here's the point. We make potassium hydroxide and hydrogen cyanide. So, first of all, let me look up the Ka of HCN. Yeah, 6.2 times 10 to negative 10. And again, you might say, well, how was I supposed to recognize this was the conjugate base of a weak acid? It's an acid-base chapter problem. And so it is the point of this problem to show you need to recognize it. And this is exactly the type of example. So if we look what's here, if we ignore the potassium, then we have CN minus, which could be our base. We have water. We have OH minus, which is what we get from the water. And then we have HCN, which is the conjugate acid. So, if we were going to work this problem, we need the KB of Cn minus. Why? Because to rewrite this equation, it's Cn minus plus water reacting to make hydroxide and HCN. So the KB is going to be hydroxide concentration times HCN concentration divided by the Cn minus concentration. That's why we need a KB. But once we solve the problem, OH concentration has to be converted into pH. Now, I'm not working this problem because from here on out, it's just the same kind of ice problem we've done a lot of times. The whole point of giving you this example is to understand which one of these types of problems in class did we do. So, in class, we did dissociation of a straight-up acid. This is not that reaction. We did the dissociation of a straight-up base. This is not a neutral base. So, remember, there's another category, which is the conjugate base of an acid. And that's exactly this type of problem. So, let me make a side comment that came up during this, though. Which is, how can the conjugate of a weak acid also be weak? Because that came up not in the context of this problem exactly, but it comes up in this problem because Ka is 6.0 times 10 to negative 10th. To solve for Kb of the conjugate, which is Cn minus, that's going to be equal to 1.0 times 10 to negative 14th divided by 6.2 times 10 to negative 10th. The 1.0 times 10 to negative 14th is Kw at 25 degrees Celsius. Kw is that autoionization of water. The fact that water will dissociate all by itself because there's some fraction of molecules they have the energy to do so. That discussion we had in relationship to defining what acids and bases are, that's when I brought up Kw. And so that's what the value is here. So if we solve 10 to the negative 14 power divided by 6.2 to the times 10 to the negative 10 power, it equals 1.61 times 10 to the negative 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Well, Ka and Kb are much less than 1. So both are weak. And I know what you might be saying in response to this. It's like, well, Dr. Gray, I thought you said that if you got a strong acid, its conjugate's going to be weak. And if you have a really weak acid, its conjugate base is going to be strong. Yes. But what if you have a kind of weak acid, not a really, really, really weak one? Well, then its conjugate is a weak base, not a really, really, really weak one, but it is one. So more correct, precise wording would be the stronger an acid is, the weaker its conjugate is. Let me squeeze that in down here. So the stronger a conjugate acid is, the weaker... Ah, that's the important part. The weaker the conjugate base is. So, questions about anything we've discussed so far? All right, moving on. From that same problem set, the question is, what is the pH of 0.40 molar triethyl ammonium chloride? Which it's structure could be written like this, in parentheses CH3, CH2, close parentheses, 3NHCl. One possible way of writing the structure. Better way to do it is to see it in person. I'm using organic notation because this is an organic compound. It has lots of carbons in it. An ethyl group is a two-carbon group. Used similarly to the way that methyl is used to refer to one carbon. So we have three ethyl groups attached to this one nitrogen, and we have a hydrogen on there. Again, the reason for bringing up this problem is explaining you need to recognize this is a product of a base neutralized with HCl. How did that occur? Triethylamine looks just like ammonia. It's just it's got carbons attached instead of hydrogens. That means it can undergo the same kind of reaction that ammonia would do, which is where it would react with a hydrogen, forming exactly the salt that's the subject of this problem. So that means that the base is a Brunsted-Lowry base. But importantly, that means the conjugate is a weak acid. Part of the focus is on, it is an acid, but it is also important to say it's going to be a weak acid. So what does that mean we have to do to solve this problem? This substance is the same thing, like I said already, as an amine being neutralized by HCl. So that means that it's going to dissociate back and act like an acid once it's formed. So the equation we need is we're going to ignore chloride. Chloride, this one's easier to explain why. Chloride is ignored. Because it is the conjugate. Here, let me redo this, sorry. Chloride is ignored because it is the conjugate. Of an extremely strong acid. So chloride is a very weak base. So weak, in fact, that it's essentially non-reactive. Excuse me just a moment. So what's going to happen is that once the nitrogen gets a proton, like I said, it's going to come back off again. And with the proton on there, we can call this HA. It's going to be HA plus, and that's all right. Then we're going to make A and H plus as products. So the KA is going to equal to H plus times A over HA plus. And that KA is the conjugate K, the conjugate Ka of triethylamine. So this, I forget which number problem type this was, but this is the neutralization of a weak base with a strong acid, which is the same thing as having a solution prepared by a conjugate of a weak base. So we need KB because that's the substance that originally got protonated to make this salt. And then we use it to turn it into a KA because this is an acidic compound. Now if it's asking for pH at the end, this is a more convenient problem to work because the X, the thing that you're solving for, is the H plus concentration, the X in the ice problem. And so you don't have OH at the end that you have to do something with. You already are set up with H plus. So now, does anyone have any questions about these two examples? I'll put on the first page here that in your text, this is, if the info I got in office hours was right, chapter 18, number 111. So let me write it that way. Chapter 18, problem 111. Wait, does this mean that he's planning to put problems like this on the exam? You mean problems that are exactly the same as what we did in lecture, which is the same thing as these, except that I didn't tell you the story first, so you had to figure out what the problem was we had to work, but otherwise identical problems? Questions? You are out there, right?
Yes.
I think it's not inappropriate to share this one moment. Perhaps at this point, we should go over a list of topics that are going to be on exam number 3. And let me remind myself what was on the most recent quiz so I don't do the same thing over again. And you're all thinking, oh, it's okay, Dr. Gray. We don't mind. No, please, don't worry. Oh, that's right. The quiz was nothing but kinetics, 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 kinetics. And the last quiz has been turned in, so over the weekend I am going to be grading those. And I appreciate your patience as we gave this person a break. So then we're looking here at the previous exam. And we did have one little pH problem on there. And then I'm looking on the quiz before. I've never asked you about definitions of acids and bases, have I? The really simple question. There are only two that we form... Oh, I'm not sharing anymore, as I... Hold on. Yeah, so someone's reminding me. iPad, Dr. Gray. All right, so the only two definitions we've formally covered are the Arrhenius and the Brunstad-Lowry. Perhaps I had mentioned the Lewis definition, which is the third definition, but it's not going to be on the exam. So that's why I wanted to clearly state it's these two definitions. I might have already asked something related to it, but you still should know the difference between strong and weak acids and bases. And then, quite simply stated, the four types of problems. And one was pH. I mean, it'd be silly to ask for it, but technically I could ask for pOH of an acid. pH, or in this case it makes more sense, pOH of a base. Third problem, and I forget what the order was, but it was the pH or the pOH of the conjugate of an acid, and the pH or the pOH of the conjugate of the base. Now, that does mean automatically that you understand the relationship between KW, KA, and KB. And the relationship is that KA times KB is equal to KW. That's why the stronger the acid strength is, higher KA, the weaker the base strength is going to be, the lower the KB. That means you should also know that there's this pKW, which is also related to the pH and the pOH. pKW is equal to pH plus pOH. Let me take a quick look at some potential problems on the exam to see if there's any major topics I'm leaving out. I'll put in a big hint, and you might want to search for problems similar to this to work on. If you know the pH of an acid, and the concentration of the acid, the Ka can be calculated using an ice table. Why? Because the pH will lead you to the concentration of H+, which is going to be X, most likely, in your ice problem. So it's an easier type of acid-base problem, but one we haven't practiced as much in class, and that's going, instead of from Ka to a pH, you go from a pH to a Ka. Now, one related statement is that if only pH is known, not the acid concentration, the strength of the acid cannot be determined. And just to say, for example, a solution of pH 5 could be a relatively concentrated solution of acetic acid, or a very dilute solution
Professor, does it say 5 after pH?
Yes, of pH 5. pH 5 is a little bit acidic, not that acidic. So people make the mistake sometimes of seeing pH 5 and saying, oh, that must be a weak acid. That's not true. If you had a 1.0 times 10 to the negative 5 molar solution of HCl, its approximate pH would also be 5. HCl is a strong acid. It's just that it can be really dilute versus a weak acid, which maybe doesn't have much impact on pH, but if it's more concentrated, it would. And so that's why if you don't know how much acid is there, you only know its pH, then you don't know anything about the strength of the acid. So this looks like it's all of the acid-base material, except one. I remember there is one topic that I need to sum up again because it's been a little while since we've talked about it. And that is the topic of neutral versus neutralized. Remember that neutral has only one strict definition. H plus is equal to OH minus concentration. Not acid equals base. Neutralized has one very specific definition. Moles acid equals moles base. Not anything to do with H plus and OH minus. Why are these two terms different? There's a really long, painful equilibrium-based argument that we could make. And I've actually done that argument in class before. But there's a really simple way to say it as well, which is this. If the strength of an acid and base are not the same, even if they react an equal number of moles, they will not dissociate. To produce the same amount of H plus and OH minus. Different strengths. So, if the strength of an acid and base are not the same, even if they react an equal number of moles, they will not dissociate to produce the same amount of H plus and OH minus. So the solution may be neutralized but not neutral. So the longer, more painful discussion that we made down in the past is where we took something like acetic acid, and I said, imagine that we rip all the protons off of acetic acid. Then that makes acetate, which is supposed to be in equilibrium with that acid. But if you've completely neutralized it, then you've completely made only products. So Q is equal effectively to infinity, so it's beyond K. The reaction's been pushed way uphill in energy. And since you only have products, you know that they're going to go back and form reactants, so the concentrations are not the same. So using those definitions of equilibrium, if you force acetic acid to be fully neutralized, then it's going to work its way backwards, which means it's going to come back, make acetic acid, but that's the long way. Here's the easier way. If you take something like sodium hydroxide and you react it with acetic acid, then because you have a strong acid and a weak base, sorry, I said that backwards. Since you have a weak acid and a strong base, then that means it's going to make a basic salt. But if you had HCl and ammonia to make ammonium chloride, then you have a strong acid with a weak base that's going to make something that's acidic. So again, neutral and neutralized, not exactly the same thing. That finally wraps up the acid-base chemistry, which may be the larger portion of the exam. The other obvious topic, the reason we delayed, is, of course, thermodynamics. There's a lot of thermodynamics left for us to discuss in terms of theory, in terms of details. But in thermodynamics, the two main topics we discussed were this. What is free energy? It is something that tells us whether the reaction is spontaneous or not, meaning will the reaction occur without outside energy input? We know that there's an equation this is equal to. There is more to talk about this equation, but for right now, this is good enough. And if you've read the whole chapter, one of the very specific things left to talk about is the standard state. And so I recognize that there's another equation, but it's not going to be one that's on this exam, because we're obviously not going to have time today to finish talking about it. So then the very specific application of thermodynamics that we talked about is, I should throw in here, what is delta S? In other words, what is entropy? Again, it won't be as in-depth a type of question as we might have once we finish the chapter. So in terms of a definition, entropy is the tendency of matter and energy to become spread out or homogenized. There's different vocabulary words you could use, But put simply, it's distribution of matter and energy. It's also thought of as order and disorder. So that's why I talked about a system melting. In a system melting, it has a change in entropy. The molecules are becoming more loose, more randomly oriented, give them more ways that energy can be distributed. For the really super observant, you might remember that back when we were doing heating curves, I made the statement that if you do it very carefully, when you add energy, you can either heat a substance up or you change its phase, or you can't do both. Since entropy really has the effect of energy, what's really happening during a phase change is it's an entropy change. And so the energy you're adding in goes into the form of entropy. But that's getting off topic. More important is that you need to know what delta S greater than zero and what delta S less than zero mean. So spontaneous or not, back above, that would be delta G less than zero, delta G greater than zero. For entropy, what are the same expressions? What do they mean physically? And then the specific example is the formation of a solution, of an aqueous solution, of ammonium nitrate. There are two points of that example. One is just to have a chance to talk about Hess's law again. The fact that we could talk about the formation of a solution either by simply dumping it in water and figuring out by calorimetry maybe what that energy change would be, or we could calculate it in two steps. First, we figure out how much energy it takes to pull all the ions apart, and then we calculate how much energy gets released again when the ions get surrounded by water. In the case of ammonium nitrate, how much energy it takes to pull the ions apart is much greater than the energy you get when you hydrate them, and so overall it absorbs energy, which is why the solution gets cold, which is why it doesn't make sense that the reaction happens. Because if the first law, or if the enthalpy alone was what determined if a reaction occurs or not, it shouldn't happen. It's uphill. But because of entropy, making a solution is a huge positive change in entropy. And so that's where this delta G equals delta H minus T delta S equation comes in. Enough positive entropy change can still make delta G negative, even if delta H is positive. And that was exactly the point that we had discussed.